Blog Talk Radio.
On a man-made lake, there's a sheet of thin ice. With unskilled skaters, cut figure eight twice. At 16, uncut, direct from the cult. Head on assault, the result, death by the bolt. In the vault, it spoke about the average lost permission that was seen by a king in a prophetic vision. Like a plane crash from a bomb blast. Special broadcast, slot time with Comcast. They kept the jury quiet, and now the riot performed. While satanic man, now hanging his dorm. I swing on you fake radio personalities, whoosh your ratings. With hikes behind casualties of fire shots. With low pressure water gunplay. Instantly slap your five like it's Palm Sunday. I fashioned the first tool from the elements the earth used. And built it to a complex network of communication. You're up against a hopeless situation. I screen every vehicle through enemy observation. Swarming unpredictably. We spread terror. Increase the fog significantly. Change the era. Check my wind pattern. It's heading west. Success is freedom, but failure can mean death. Human sweat and aim shovels. Dig up debris and rubble. Permanent damage caused by the double. You, now who, cowardly urge you to merge through. And think the workers that serve you, the Sonic Marvel, who just dropped the next novel. Worldwide, rapidly, more than Marvel. It's a countless amount of MCs I saved. And them same niggas wanna swindle those gifts I gave.
Age of Comics. This is the Chronicles of the Revolutionary Nerd 10. This is your host, Mr. Andre Batts. Tonight, Miss Kelly McAlpine will not be with us, nor will Cynthia McDonald be with us tonight. But needless to say, we have two very important brothers here tonight, Mr. Larry Strowman and Mr. Todd Johnson. I'm sure some of you guys remember them from Tribe. You know, it was a brand under the Image Comics logo. That was done, I think, back in 93, 94. I'm telling you, this guy Strowman, he's just off the hook. He's just consistently working. His art is just phenomenal. There's so much you can say about him, but we only have an hour to talk to him and Todd Johnson, and hopefully they give us some good news to let us know that they're going to be bringing Tribe back into the fold within the next couple of years. Let's see what they have to say. Hold on. Mr. Strowman.
Hello, can you hear me?
I hear you good now. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you real good.
Oh, okay, good. I wasn't even sure if I did this thing right or not.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got on there pretty early, I think.
Is Todd there?
I think you got on here pretty early.
Okay, that's cool.
How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing okay.
And how about yourself, Todd?
Doing very good.
Good. It's good to hear you.
How about yourself, Andre?
Not too much. You know, I just think it would be a good thing to get you guys on here. I did bring up the Tribe Project, but we'll get into that, last or whatever, because I'm sure you guys got something, up your sleeve that you're just hiding from us right now. I'm sure you're going to do something in the future, right? Todd, you got to get back in the game.
I've been the one hiding.
Oh, it's been Larry hiding?
It's all my fault.
There you go. Oh, you heard it here first.
All right. I just thought it was going to be Todd.
Basically, if there's any questions to ask about that, it's usually I'm the one to ask because I'm the one who's stalling on it.
Okay, well, that's what I'll do. We'll start with some basic questions initially. We'll start with that. We'll go with you, Larry. Who were your first earliest inspirations and your present influences that inspire your art and your writing?
As far as art goes, I mean, I was like all over the place when I was young. I mean, I was pretty much equally as into fine art, classic art, you know, modern pop art, comic books, movies, TV, cartoons. I mean, all of it was interesting to me. And up to a certain point, I wasn't even sure exactly what I was going to do. I knew it was something having to do with art, but I wasn't quite sure until, you know, after I bought, I think it was, what was that graphic novel, Todd?
Bring on the Bad Guy?
The Origins of Marvel Comics. When I bought that day. I said, this is it. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Wow. And you've been putting in some real good work, you know, with the X-Factor. It's not much anyone can say about your work, you know, as far as on the negative side, by far, you know. Your work
I have
is
some
just
haters
amazing.
Out there.
Say
I have
some
later. Haters out there.
Yeah, well, I understand. You know, they always say that we're starving or whatever for the most part, you know, but you're putting in some good work, you know, it's amazing. And Todd, what about you and your writing? Have you been writing? I know you've been putting on the Charivari Affairs in Detroit. Have you been writing towards any comics or any type of stories, like novels, anything?
You know, I'm always writing, but, you know, it's like stuff that people have seen. I put out a book about sex about 2 years ago called Nasty As I Am. And that was an unusual departure from going from comic books to to
yeah,
sex.
Yeah, right in
but,
the poor.
That's right. But, you know,
he's gonna follow it up with a children's book.
There you go. I'm working on a children's book, so that's a very I'm all over the place. But by nature, I'm more of a promoter. You know, I like to promote things, so that's why I do Charivari. I think that's why Larry brought me on for Tribes, because I make a lot of noise and promote stuff. That's what I like to do.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. You should, you know, set up something to get some comic book creators at the Charivari this year. Belle Isle. You're doing it at Belle Isle, right?
Yep, Belle Isle, August, first week in August.
Oh, yeah,
we did about 15,000 people last year, so we're hoping to top that number.
Yeah, I was there, so I know.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I didn't know you were there until I was looking through some of the pictures, like just a couple months ago. So Andre Butt.
Right, it was so crowded. It was so crowded. You know, I was in there. You know, I caught Tony Dennis. I caught that was a Groove Detroit and Alan Esther's set.
Okay. Tony Dennis. That's the man there, Tony Dennis.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I caught all of them just about. Then I had to get on up out of there. You know, I had a good time. You know, I'm looking forward to this year as well.
You know, there's a lot of people into the comic business there in Detroit who had no idea that he had anything to do with that.
That's true.
Well, you know, when I seen his name on there, you know, I figured out who it was. At first, I thought it was another Todd Johnson. You know, because the last I actually heard of Todd Johnson was when you were doing the comic book. So actually, when you owned the bookstore. Back on 9 Mile in Ferndale.
Okay. Yeah, that's way back.
Yeah, that's way back. And then, you know, you weren't doing anything for a while.
Todd has done so many different things. You probably been involved with a lot of stuff that he's done and didn't even know it.
Right? No, I believe it. You know, once I seen his name, I was like, oh, okay. So he probably have been doing a lot. You know, and I'm like, wow, you know, I'm missing everything here. I just been walking with tunnel vision.
You know it's just
possible.
It's just about staying busy and staying, you know, I'm not going to say unbored, but just, you know, if you have a lot of things that you're interested in, you know, you have to keep busy just not to be, you know, just start getting bored, basically. And then, you know, when you're bored, then your creativity goes down. So, you know, you kind of go all over the place now. You know, if your thing is only comics and that's what, you know, that's what drives you, that's great. But
right,
because my background is more marketing and promotion and stuff, I just kind of have to be all over the place.
Oh, yeah, you have to. That's the only way, like you said, the only way your name would be out there, you know, because you can't be a promoter and not promote anything.
There you go.
That is true.
There you go.
You know, no.
You know, because you're always promoting something.
I'm trying to do something, you know, here and there, you know. But we all know how it is. You know what they say about Detroit.
How many years are you into the convention that you throw?
with the Motor City Black Gang. This will be the 8th year.
Wow. Okay. That's great. That's
good. You know, we started at the top of the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is 5 people there, you know, and like 6 people in the crowd or whatever. We've been growing here and there, you know.
I've been a guest at those kind of conventions before.
Oh, so you know all about it then, Larry. Matter of fact, you was at one a couple of years ago out in Chicago, PocketCon.
Those are, you know, the smaller conventions sometimes you're like part guest, part staff. You end up helping break down tables and chairs and everything, you know. It's all
exactly.
good, you know. You know, cause
well, you
sometimes
know, when
you
I was
find the people the most interested.
Well, you know, the last time I spoke to Ashley Woods, who I think was on your last show, I was explaining to her, you know, a lot of people feel that the secret to becoming known in his business is to go to the big conventions. And I said, that's not really where you start. You should start off at the smaller conventions and build up your fan base so that they will follow you to these bigger conventions. Because a lot of times the unknown people, when they're at these big conventions, they just get kind of lost amongst all of what's going on, especially like that San Diego convention and New York convention. And
yeah.
It's just like you just, you know, people go there, they get disappointed, they spend a lot of money, they buy these tables, they set up and print all the stuff, and then nobody pays attention to them because they don't have a fan base. There's nobody knows who they are. Nobody's familiar with anything that they do.
That is true. And you know, that brings me, you know, to a quote that you had made on Facebook a while back, Larry, about, you know, the black people who go to the comic shows and the events in the comic stores who break their necks to avoid every black creator that's working on independent.
What it is is people kind of took something that I said, which was very simple, which was kind of geared towards a certain group of people, and they kind of just went off with it and they brought it to all these different places and everybody gave their interpretations of it or whatever. But my thing was that what I was talking about is the people who will come to shows and they won't even give somebody a chance. You know, it's like you see a guy sitting over there at a table, you won't even walk over to his table. It's just you see him, you see his color, and you just walk past him because you don't take him serious. And that's been the main thing that we've had dealing with this business being black, is that we're not taken serious by a lot of people. Even though there's still a lot of people that will like the work that we do, it still takes a lot to get people to even pay attention to it. Because I've gone to shows where I'm like the most popular person at the show, and I still get people walk past my table like they just, you know, it's like I'm just nobody to them. So that's something that's going to come in time. But for now, it is a struggle. So people sit out there and they're feeling that, oh, you know, there's all these people here and they're paying attention to all this stuff, but they're not paying attention to, you know, this effort that I put through to put out my book. And we're going to have to do this as a whole to get people to say, hey, yeah, these books are just as good as these books over here. So I'm at least giving these books a chance. Even though I'm familiar with these other characters more, I want to give these books a chance because they look good, because they read well, you know, whatever. Because for a long time, and I'm sure everybody would admit it, a lot of the books, the quality of these books weren't that
good.
I mean, they were printing books at Kinko's, and you know, there was a lot of bad printing and put together bad, whatever, because they didn't have the money to do the professional quality stuff. But now you have situations set up where you can make small runs of books that actually look good. So now the thing is to make your presentation a better presentation, but still we still have that obstacle of trying to get people to take us serious. And that's what I was talking about when I made that comment.
I figured that's what you were saying because I've done several bigger conventions as well, and I knew exactly what you were talking about. But the one thing I wanted to do, and I like to do, you know, I usually like to talk to the person so they can share with me, you know, their thoughts on what they had said, because like you say, when everybody's giving their take on it, it's going to have something totally different from what you initially said.
Well, me and Todd, we went at this show once, right? And we had this long line of people, and this line went for the entire day. I mean, all we were able really to do is to take a break to go to the bathroom. We had to eat at our table because we were signing books for all these people. Okay, but in the meantime, I noticed there was this woman, and she had a couple of kids, and she just kept passing by our table over and over again. And she was passing by our table the whole day. But what she was doing was she was stopping at everybody else's table. So when we finally got to a point near the end of the day, I called her over, and I said, can I ask you a question? And she said, yes. I said, I noticed that you've been here, and you've been walking past our table, and you stopped at everybody else's table except our table. And I said, I just wanted to know the reason why. So her answer was, oh, I didn't think you was anybody. And I said, but we had people at our table the whole day.
Right.
But still, in her mind, she's still thinking we're nobody.
Just based on the color.
That's what we're having to fight with all the time. So when people want to start throwing out the word sellout, when people want to start criticizing people because they're working for this company or they're working for that company but not doing this, or, you know, guys who ain't helping brothers out and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
They don't have any idea how much we actually go through to just be able to put a book out and make any kind of money off that book.
Yeah, I remember
well, this
now.
Is,
you
this,
and
this
I,
this is one of my
you and
favorite
I did talk about that. You and I did talk about that at the PocketCon at one time. How, you know, guys be, you know, saying things like, you know, sell out, and they just don't understand the struggle that everyone's going through. Not just
I think it's like an unfair criticism, because what you're saying is, okay, here's all these guys over here, and they're not successful for this reason. But the two or three or four guys that actually become successful, they had to have taken some kind of shortcut to get to where they're going. And that's why we call them sellouts. But the thing is, there is no shortcut. I mean, I could spend, me and Todd alone could spend a couple of weeks just telling you stuff that we went through just trying to put out one single comic book.
And see, people don't see that. They don't see that whole, the mechanics of that. When they, like, take Tribe, for example. People just say, okay, here they did this book. They got the image eye on it. They sold 1 million copies. But they don't know all of the struggle that it took and all the things just even being within the image eye that other people got that we didn't, that we had to get out there. And like he said, there's 1 million stories that went into that 1 million sale. And it wasn't easy. And you get no credit for that. You get people that disparage you by just saying, oh, all they did is this. Or all they did was that. And if that was the case, if it was so easy to sell 1 million comics just by having the image eye, then why didn't all the image books sell 1 million copies?
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Tribe number one actually outsold most of the image creators.
Titles.
Those numbers, they should have all have gotten those numbers, but some of them did, but some of them didn't. So we did. So then the question is, okay, what did we do that we were able to do that? It's that untold story of that almost year that we spent trying to promote this one single comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Traveling around everywhere, going on all kinds of radio shows, TV shows, interviews with every kind of magazine that we can get on. And we were getting doors slammed on our face over and over and over. But we just kept at it.
We used to say, this used to be the most popular thing that would happen. We set up in multiple shows that you've probably all been to, San Diego, WonderCon, all the major shows. And Larry can attest to the fact, we'd sit there, we've got this backdrop. Sometimes the backdrop had our pictures on it. We're sitting there sometimes with name tags. We're signing books, as Larry said, lines of people, and somebody would walk up sometime during the day, every time, and say, when is Mr. Strowman and Mr. Johnson going to get here? Like we're sitting there holding their table.
Right.
Or if somebody came to conduct business, like somebody that wanted to license for trading cards or posters or have you appear on a show, they were always like leaving a card with either myself or Larry and saying, would you have Mr. Strowman or Mr. Johnson give me a call when they get back? It was hilarious.
That sounds hilarious. That sounds hilarious.
So the thing is, even when you're doing it right up in people's faces, they still can't believe that you're actually doing it, that you're actually this person who does this. And that's the thing we deal with all the time. Now, I'm pretty sure, you know, it was a lot of that stuff was a little bit easier for me because I came in at a higher ranking than most of the people that come in new in the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had people who looked out for me, people who liked my stuff or not, people like me enough that they were able to say, hey, go speak to this guy, go speak to that guy, go over there. You know, and I was able to get a lot of the work, but it still didn't make the stuff easy. Never at any point was it ever easy.
No, I agree, because the sad part about it is that it's still the same to this day.
Yep.
You know, you're talking 20 years.
Yep.
You know,
you guys mentioned something about quality and art and the writing being better now, though, Andre. I think sometimes part of what people are missing also is the marketing and promotion has to be of the same caliber of who you're competing with, too. And I think the mistake that a lot of small press people do is they enjoy being in that niche of small press because sometimes it doesn't demand that you think you can be bigger. You always hear people talking about the big two with Marvel and DC, and then they talk about Dark Horse and Image. You don't even strive to be as big as them. You're happy with wherever you're at, so you never really analyze. Maybe it could be you need to spend a little money on your logo. It could mean you need to promote a little bit better. You need to tighten up your display. I mean, we used to go to shows, and we still go to shows. And to see how people are displaying their stuff, that's part of how you're looked at as a professional.
That
you know,
is
people
true.
Have mad looks on their face, or they're pissed off because they bought 100 comics and they're not sold one. You know, it's like
I did a post once where I was saying, you know, that for all the people that complain that the reason why they're not selling books at shows is because of the cosplayers. I'm like, man, it's not the cosplayers. It's you.
Right.
It's you, and it's always been you. I mean, you're the one who has to sell the stuff. You're the one who has to be friendly to people and get people to take money out of their pocket to give to you. Because I've had times where I've walked up to people's tables, and they kind of turn their back to me. Like I'm like, I come up here as a customer, and you're not even going to make eye contact with me? I'm like, forget that.
I mean, you get it, Andre. You're doing constant cross promotion with the dreadlocks. You're constantly doing things, and then
I think personally that collectively it can be done if everyone was on the same page. You know, like establishing like a universe, like an image universe, where you establish a good, strong, you know, 15 characters in the sense of like 15 different individuals. And you do, like you said, the cross-promotion, the marketing, advertising, and things of that nature. If you get some people that are really focused on doing that, I think it could happen. But the problem we're running into now is with the small press runs, now it has everyone thinking that they can be on top on their own.
Yeah. It seems that way to me.
And like you said, it doesn't work that way, but you have the individuals that say, well, let's do this thing collectively and let's make it happen, but no one actually comes together to make it happen.
Well, most collectives
one of the other ones for me that I never quite understood, and there's been a number of guys that I know in the business and still know that's in the business who I'm not going to mention their names, who for whatever reason feels that as long as you go to these same four or five little shows every year, and you go to this black event or that black expo or whatever, that's all you need to do. And I'm like, man, that's not where all the comic fans are at. I mean, the comic fans are like all over the place.
They
just
really
like
are.
Just as it's important to go to an ECBAC or whatever, you also need to go to the bigger shows too. And you need to go to the regular shows, and you need to go to other type of shows because that's where the fans at. And it's in a lot of the same black guys that you want to buy your comics go to those shows also.
Right, right. You know, and that kind of
go ahead.
It kind of ties into, you know, the black guys that, or the black so-called black nerds that walk by your booth, and you know, you're right there, and they see all this dynamic art, but for some reason they just avoid walking to your booth. You know, you still
run
into that situation sometimes.
But see, but from day one that I first walked into a convention, I've been dealing with that. So that's just normal for me. You know, I don't get it. I don't understand it. But it just becomes normal after a while. I don't understand what it's about. But you know, that's just how that is.
But that's the important part, though, too, and not pigeonholing yourself to being
right.
You're not just a black company. You're not a black comic. You're just a comic book. You know, and I think sometimes we strive so hard to be part of something, but yet we put ourselves in a niche ourselves. You know,
right.
Everything has to be, this is the black Avenger. This is the black
right.
speedster. This is the black fly guy. You don't have to just put out a good comic.
Going
it
back
can have
to
a black scene. Yeah, just put it out and promote it. Treat yourself like you can compete right at the same level as everybody else. And the internet really does level the playing field a little bit. Your presence on the internet can be magnified. It's like the Wizard of Oz. You can really be behind the curtain, making your thing look like the great and powerful.
Well, you know, you know, one of the things that Todd used to laugh about, and used to make fun of me about, is my casualness in which I went about dealing with people in the business, dealing with professionals in the business or whatever. So me and Todd would be walking through a show, and I walk up to a guy, and I'm like, hey, man. He'd be like, hey, man, how you doing? We're shaking hands, and we talking about regular stuff, whatever, and then we walk away. Then I'd say, oh, yeah, Todd, that's such and such a guy. And he'd be like, what? That's who? That's what? And he couldn't believe that I was just being so casual about these. But it's because I felt that the only way I could be on an equal level with them is I had to act like them. I had to do
right.
the same things they did. I had to study the same stuff that they studied. You know, I had to go about my career just like they did. You know, and it paid off eventually.
Well, I like myself. I like doing all the shows myself. If I can make it to all of them, you know, I can make it. My favorite is San Diego Comic Con, but it's just too expensive to go out there. So I've been going to New York Comic Con, and the game plan is to make it out there again this year, because this is much reasonable than the San Diego Comic Con. As far as, you know, price and
Now, when you say you like it, does that mean you do well at that show, or you just enjoy the show itself? Okay.
Actually, you know, I do well at San Diego Comic Con as well, but the thing is, not well enough where I should be traveling there too much.
Yeah, because of the cost of the event itself.
Exactly.
Well, that show is just set up to cost a whole bunch of money. So that
exactly.
The San Diego
right.
show, I tell people, I tell people those shows are not even about making money. They're about connections. They're about, you know, networking and all that type of stuff.
But like Todd explained earlier, you know, with the internet has somewhat leveled the playing field, because now you're connecting with several people, you know, via internet now.
Right.
Whether it's Facebook or whatever, you don't necessarily have to be at all the shows physically like that, because if you're making your presence known on the internet, they'll come to you, or you end up running into them some type of way on the internet.
Yeah, and that's the truth. And people are not mining the data that's on their own social media enough to just continue to expand it and to continue to ask people to support what you're doing and spread the word. You know,
Like what Todd was saying earlier, okay, so you go, you decide, hey, you know, I want to do my own book, and I'm going to go, and I got this amount of money, and I'm going to go and make these copies and sell this book. So you go and you get a print run of 50 copies, or you get a print run of 200 copies or whatever, and you do well, okay? And then you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to start a new book and blah, 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 blah. And my thing is, why did you stop at 50? Why did you stop at 200? Why didn't you think in your mind, just like, and this is the exact words that I said, when me and Todd have set out to do Tribe, he says, what do you want to do with this? And I jokingly said, I want this to be the biggest selling black creator comic ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we set out to do. See, we didn't set out to sell 50 copies. We didn't set out to sell 200 or 2,000 copies. We didn't even set out to do 200,000 copies. We wanted to be right up there with everybody else. So we had to use the mindset. We had to use our mindset to do that, to say, hey, we're walking into the same thing with them. We're being treated the same way. We dealt with the same printers that they dealt with. We dealt with the same distributors that they dealt with. We went to the same shows, had the same kind of display, and we did all this on our own.
And that irritated a lot of folks.
If more of those guys were set out to do that, I think they would do so much better.
That's true. Now, that's when you guys formed Axis? Because I know when you were with Image,
Axis
had Tribe.
No, Axis came later on. Yeah. Axis came much later on.
It came much later? And you were more on the independent
Axis,
scale then, right?
Axis was basically, it wasn't, we didn't set out to do our own company. What we set out to do is, we set out to just continue what it is we already started with Tribe Number One.
Mm-hmm.
Now, me personally, I had hit a point, I had built a plateau point of being in the industry where I had gone through a whole lot of stuff, and I had hit a point where I just didn't want to do it anymore. And most of us, at some point or another, we hit that point. And I had hit that point. You know, Todd was still wanted to continue and do it, but I just said, man, I'm just kind of tired of this now.
Right.
I pulled out. Because previous to doing the Image thing, I was dealing with a lot of stuff with Marvel and a lot of stuff with a couple of other companies and had fallen outs with people that I was dealing with up there. It just, all of it just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. And the only thing that even kept me going for those last couple of years was just the energy that Todd had to want to do this stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, Todd obviously still has that energy to this day. We know that, right? So
now we're just a bunch of old
bears. With that being said,
you know, me and Todd were just having a conversation the other night about all these various guys who was always trying to sneak off and whisper in my ear and, you know, hey, you don't need this guy. You know, come over here with us and do this and do that. I'm like, no, man, this is my friend. This is the dude that I'm doing my book with. This is my business partner. And I said, and I trust this dude. And they're like, oh, no, man, well, come over here and be with us and do this and do that. And we were talking about how most of those guys, but just about all those guys, are not even friends with each other anymore.
Right.
But here it is 20-something years later, and me and Todd are still friends.
Right, and those guys aren't even doing anything anymore for the most part.
Yep.
But I'm going to get back to what I was getting ready to say. Now, Todd obviously still has that energy. When are you guys going to put Axis back together and put out a Tribe and let me put dreadlocks in there too?
Again, that all has to do with me because Todd, like he always says, he said, hey, man, I'm down for whatever, man. So it's just a matter of me getting it together.
Because I know you got a lot going on as far as the different books you're drawing right now, Larry, right? So that probably takes up a lot of time.
I'm not drawing a lot of books. I'm drawing a lot of stuff. I'm drawing commissions.
Gotcha.
I'm drawing a lot of covers. I'm drawing bits and pieces of stuff. And then on the other hand, I got four or five other projects that are kind of in the works right now.
Well, we need to get you back on Tribe because everybody's waiting to see something from Larry Strowman and Todd Johnson.
Yep.
Well, maybe we better do something new then.
Yeah,
something new,
right. Bring it to them, and people will love it, I'm sure, and it'll probably do one
million
plus.
The thing that we're both glad about is the fact that even after 20-something years that people still mention that book. And I like the fact, and this is my own personal thing, when I think of all the other artists and stuff that I've known who've been in this industry or whatever, they're known for certain things. That I'm glad that I'm mostly known for my own book, for a book that I did my own. Yeah, I'm glad that I did X Factor and Alien Legion and all that other stuff, but I am glad that effort that we put through to do that book, that's the thing that I get the most amount of credit for.
Well, you know, Larry, if we put together some samples, man, we might be able to get on, you know, get with Tion and get on Generate Comics or maybe Andre let us do Kid Dreadlocks or something like that.
Yep.
You know, myself and Tion would be more than happy to have that happen.
You know, me and Larry make a lot of noise, Andre. I don't know if you guys want to hang with us, man. We got, you know, once we get started, man, we generate a whole bunch of nonsense and stuff.
That's why he's called Generate Comics. Make it happen. So obviously,
how's your whole thing been going? I mean, you've been going to shows and stuff.
Mine's been going pretty good, but you know, the thing that I was getting at earlier about the San Diego thing is the break even thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just like what you brought up earlier. You know, why print out 50 books and then you run into a problem like, man, I sold everything and actually didn't sell anything. I kind of ran into that my first year when I went to San Diego Comic Con. When I first went out there, I released this book. There was a lot of people there and I didn't expect what I had got. I had like maybe 200 books and I had sold almost 200 that Thursday. The show haven't even really started. You know, that's when they have the day when they just let everybody come in to watch movies or whatever they do. I wasn't expecting that crowd. So I had to call my printer and have them ship me some more books, you know, which obviously cost.
One of the things that me and Todd had to do a few times is that we would be at shows where we wouldn't be able to anticipate what was going to happen. And then we were doing really well. And we were selling the stuff that we brought there with us. So sometimes what we would do is in the middle of the night, we'd sneak on down to the local Kinko's, 24-hour Kinko's or whatever, and we'd have, like, posters printed up and we'd have buttons made. And, I mean, we'd do all this stuff so that by the time we got back to the show the next day, we had all our stuff. But again, that was part of that whole struggle thing that you go through where there's no way for you to really know what's going to happen. So you just have to do stuff impulsively.
And that's basically what I had to do, and I didn't even I didn't expect that. Cause, you know, I was used to doing, you know, Motor City Comic Con or Wizard World Con out in Chicago. Those numbers weren't the same.
I tell you, Andre, I don't know if you realize this so far, but your best move that you've made, in my opinion, if we're just going to talk marketing, is to throw your own shows. And the only thing that I could tell you to expand on, a lot of people try to stay with the Afrocentric thing, and that's cool. But I think you could expand your audience if you treated your show like it's just another show. And what I mean by that is, why don't you invite other guests that you like? They don't all have to be black guests. They don't have to be all black companies. It could be any kind of small press. And you will find you just start competing on the level that you're expanding your show to all audiences. It's not an African-American comic show. It's just a comic show to people that love comics and love this culture.
Right.
And then from there, you were talking about getting a consensus or having a group together. There's other people that you know that are in other cities. You get your brand name together, whatever you're going to call your show, and then maybe you have four or five shows a year. There's one in Detroit. There's one in Chicago. There's one in Atlanta. There's one in Baltimore. There's one in Philly, whatever.
Right.
And you create the show that then creates the space where you can sell your stuff. You're the king of your own space.
That's true.
You know, you can sell it. See, you're never going to get the best space at San Diego. You're never going to get the best space at WonderCon. Those shows are fixed. Most of the big shows are fixed. I don't care how big me and Larry ever got. We got the scam every time we set up, and I mean every time. I don't care which show I'm disparaging. I mean, we ended up in the loading dock at a show in New York one time. They moved us three times. Every time we got the line going, somebody, we got to put you over here, we got to put you. We were down in the loading dock with the trash bins by the end of the day. You know,
right.
But that's not going to happen at the Andre Batts show.
We were at a show once where we were signing a lot of books, and it was Tribe had just come out. It was like a ton of people, and they were just mobbing us and stuff, and we're signing this. And a group of these security guards came over, and they said to us, we're going to have to move your table. And they picked our table up, and they moved it to the back of this place that we were at. Now, to this day, I've never heard of anybody who had their table moved.
No.
But they moved our table.
No.
I've never even heard of that.
No.
But I agree with you, Todd. I like what you were saying. That's why, you know, you being in marketing and promotions, that, you know, I jotted that idea down when you were talking about it. But once Larry started talking about this, you know, you all's table being moved, I wrote that down. I have hooked up with a few individuals.
Andre, let me ask you this. I'm gonna ask this question. I'm gonna ask this question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Now I lived in Detroit for 10 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. Todd's been in Detroit his whole life. Okay.
Right.
And there's a lot of these independent guys that live in the Detroit area, and they know who we are because we run into them at parties and shows and whatever. I wanted to know why it is that those guys had never consulted with us on selling comic books.
That I don't know why they've never done that.
I mean,
know every
wouldn't
time
we
I see
know?
Them talking to you.
Wouldn't we know? I mean,
Well, I know. When
that's what I think is another flaw. I think another flaw is that people don't use the sources that they have around
them
that can be helpful to them. You know.
Well, I know when I first met you guys at the comic book store over there on 9 Mile. You know, I talked with Todd briefly or whatever because he had some customers. Then I ended up talking with you, Larry, about, you know, the independent scene or whatever in the sense of self-publishing. And that's when I decided to. That's why every time I see you, I always say that you and Todd basically motivated me outside of Baba Dawood that does Brother Man are the ones that motivated me to doing my own thing. Because when I met you guys, that's basically what you know, when I seen what you were doing with Tribe, and I met him in D.C., and I was telling him some ideas, and he basically was saying, you know, you probably can work on doing some things, you know, on your own or whatever. As far as art is concerned, you know, you got to take up certain classes on the art, and you got to take up certain classes on the writing if your skill isn't there, or get someone else, you know, to write, or you write and somebody else draw. However, you know, if you want to keep your brand out there, this is what you have to do. So I don't understand why, you know, most of these individuals in Detroit do not confer with you. Because it would make sense, because you did, you know,
I mean,
you were established.
I'm not saying that they have to do it. They don't have to do anything. I'm just saying,
right.
I guess I think of it in terms of how I was. How I was is I see an artist over there. He does something that I want to do. I'm gonna spend as much time with him as possible. I'm going to get as much information from him as possible. And that's how I worked my way up in the industry. It was that I stayed in contact with as many of those guys as I possibly could.
Well, see, I don't know how many of them are here that's doing their own thing. Actually, you know, I know, like Todd mentioned, T.I., he's doing, you know, Generate with Detroit Tradecraft. And we have maybe
which is
six
some really
other
good
individuals.
Stuff, I might add.
Right. He just put out something just recently I've seen on Facebook that looked real nice.
Right.
But the thing of the matter, you don't see too many of them out there. Even at the Motor City Black Age of Comics, I may have, you know, certain people there, but I don't have as many as I could have. And I know it's a lot of individuals that are doing comics right here in the city. You know, you just don't see them, but I may see them somewhere else, like Chicago somewhere.
Right.
Which doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you know, Andre, a lot of people are not going to support what you're doing locally just because it's you doing it. And I don't mean because it's Andre Batts. I just mean it's just you're the guy that's doing something they want to do. And that's the problem when you talked about earlier, like getting a group of guys together for a common universe. Most of the time, I'm not going to say most of the time, I'm not going to be that cynical, but a lot of the times, people want to get together only as it benefits them. So
right.
as long as they can, if I can group a bunch of you guys together to pool your money together to launch something me and Larry is doing, as soon as I launch it, then I don't care about the group anymore. And that's the bad thing
yeah.
about small-minded people sometimes. They don't see the bigger picture, that if we all just keep pushing this up, pushing this up, pushing this up, then, you know, yeah, you can't have, like, a hidden agenda. You have to just go in it, like, sometimes
right.
it's going to be about me, sometimes it's going to be about you, sometimes my book's going to sell more, maybe your book might sell more. You just don't know. But you still got to keep pushing forward. It's like an army, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Because I noticed when I was in San Diego, a couple of guys in San Diego that was doing a collective thing, a guy named Robert Roach, and I think the other guy named was Andre Harris, I forget his name, but his last name, but they were doing a collective thing, and it seemed like they were pretty successful with it, but I don't know what ever happened with that.
So how do you feel about, I mean, as far as the collective thing goes, you know, I noticed that every once in a while there's other people who are also throwing small conventions and stuff, like in the Detroit area or whatever. Do you feel that that benefits what you're doing, or do you feel that takes away from what you're trying to do?
Well, that depends. You know, it can benefit what I'm doing, but at the same time, it could take away from what I'm doing. You know, I think when it's someone that has no clue of comic books or whatever, and you just brought them into the fold of what comics were all about and all this kind of stuff, and they get into doing it for their self-gain or their ego, then they're taken away from everything. So I look
yeah.
at
so,
it both
so
ways.
What, so how is that taken away from you?
I think it's taken away from
me
in the
sense of
the creative collective.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, like the creative collective don't necessarily go to the same place twice. You know
uh-huh.
what I mean? Like they don't go to Detroit. But number one, Detroit only has certain things in Detroit that you can do in Detroit about, you know, just a casino or whatever, maybe one or two other things.
Right.
You wouldn't want to go back there like twice or three times.
Right.
Well,
I remember way back before those casinos were even here, you know, when I would go to the little shows that Todd threw, I mean, we always had a great time. Everybody that came to the show had a great time. So I don't understand how that cannot be the case.
Yeah, it's not happening now. You know, because everyone is going to make money, number one. You know, like you said, you know, at Todd's shows, you all were having a good time. And that's the reason why you were there, to have a good time. But most of the people that are coming around now are coming strictly to make money. And that's cool. I'm not taking anything away from that because that's what they should do. But at the same time, it takes away from bringing the creativity or the creative collective together. If, you know, if they came last week, they're not going to want to come this week or vice versa. And I needed to meet with this person face-to-face so we can hammer some things out collectively.
Right.
It seems like you can have both, though. Seems like you make money and have fun.
You would think that because that makes sense. You know, and I like the idea of having fun and making money. Cause when I go to different shows, I like to have a good time or whatever, as well as, you know, make some money, you know, because that's the reason why I'm there. Because I don't want to feel like I'm just taking a vacation and that's it.
Right.
So what are your future plans with dreadlocks, Mr. Andre?
Man, now I feel like this is my interview.
Perhaps it is. It's your show.
this is what me and Todd does at every interview. We do the same thing.
It's all good. Well, you know, with dreadlocks, I'm in the process of working on a new suit right now with dreadlocks. It's really already done. And it won't be introduced until, like, maybe the end of this year. And I'm still interested in getting into the animation aspect of the character. I have a connection over in India, and I need to work out some things with them because I want to get more into animation with the character, more so than just comic books. You know, because I'm learning how to do motion comics.
See, another reason why we ask is because you are part of the whole. You know, it can't just be us. It can't just be whoever else. We're all part of this. And one of the things that was most disappointing to me, I started to get to know a lot of the independent guys. So I hadn't known a lot previous to that, but over a period of time, I've slowly kind of gotten contact with different guys for different reasons. Sometimes I do cover for somebody or whatever, pinup or whatever, or just have regular conversation. And the thing that was most disappointing to me is that all of the infighting, you know, there was like, I'm like, wow, I thought these guys were like having a good time together because they're all kind of had the same goal to get to the same place. But there was a lot of infighting, and I felt that was kind of slow. I think that slows stuff down, you know.
And in the meantime, it's a lot of infighting, slowing that down.
Other people were just coming in and having a great time and making a bunch of money and doing all their things and getting their options for movies and cartoons and all that kind of stuff. In the meantime, you know, these guys over here, just like, you know, they so busy not liking each other.
Well, you know, it's more of an ego thing, more so than anything. You know, if you can get rid of the egos.
Well, see, here's my thing: is how can you have an ego when you haven't really done much of anything? That's what I don't get. You know, when you start selling up in the 40s and 50,000 and hundreds of thousands, then you can have the ego. But until then, you're working to that goal. And the ego is not doing you any good. It's just not.
Well, you know, the cats come in with ego problems.
If anything, you should just be learning how other people did it. You know, you should be studying that, and you should be in contact with those people.
So, Andre, what do you do on social media for Dreadlocks?
Well, you know, with Dreadlocks, I just promote, like, different issues that I've done and different issues that's coming out in the near future. And what everyone should look for the most part. And I'm basically promote my website so that way, you know, people go to the website, you know, because I'm set up with PayPal. I got several books and everything they can order off PayPal. And that's really the main thing. I use Facebook to market my product.
So do you have a Facebook for Dreadlock?
Yes, I have one for Urban Style Comics, which is the one I have.
That's your comic company.
Yeah, or that's my company. And I also have one for Dreadlocks as well.
Okay. Okay.
I have one for both.
Now, how do you do as far as being able to consistently keep certain artists, you know, so that you can have a certain vision for what you want your stuff to look like?
Well, the artist that I'm working with now, he has what I'm looking for. And he has had it now the past year. Now, previous to this artist I'm working with now, I haven't really been able to get what I was looking for with Dreadlocks. It was either he was too bulky or he was too thin, you know. So I needed a medium-built character, and the guy that's doing it now.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said it because the one time that I drew Dreadlock, it was on that cover of the War of Independence book. And that was one of the first things that I was thinking about because when I was looking at the different pictures, I was like, how is he supposed to be? Is he supposed to be like a big, big blocky football player dude? Is he supposed to be thin? I wasn't quite sure.
Right.
And even when I finished it, I still wasn't really sure if I had actually got it correct.
Well, you captured him pretty good. You know, the thing of the matter, I just don't like him too big because, you know, you know, with the cape and everything, that makes no sense to me. But needless to say, this is what the artist was giving me or whatever. And at the time, I actually thought it was kind of hot the way he was putting it out like that. But that's the image. The artist I have now, that's the one I like. And he's very consistent, and his skills are really good. He's not a he's like a beginner for the most part, but he draws like an experienced artist that's been around for a long time. That's how good he is.
Right.
And I haven't even put any of that even on Facebook yet. But
right.
I have the Black Watch book that I'm working on as well, which also the artwork is phenomenal. And my character Jihad AD.
Right.
The artwork's pretty good in that as well. It's not as good as the other two, but it's real good. And these can compete with mainstream. And that's what I'm looking at. You know,
right.
The artwork being able to compete with what Marvel puts out and what DC puts out, or whoever else they consider themselves mainstream. Nothing below that.
Right.
And that's where you want to be.
And to me, if everybody had that same attitude, man, there would be so many good books out there.
I think so, too. And I run into that a lot when, like you guys brought up earlier about the quality of work. It's not necessarily there. And some of it, the quality is there, but the ego is far gone.
Right.
And you can have quality work, and you just don't know how to get it out there, you know? There's a whole lot of unsung, incredible artists and writers all over the place, you know?
So let me ask this question before we get on off of here. What does the future hold for Larry Strobin and Todd Johnson?
Well, we've always had stuff in the works, but, you know, I was usually doing something or he was doing something, but it was mostly because of me. We have our children's book that we're working on. We just had a new project that just recently that I just sent him some drawings for that we're working on. And somewhere amongst all of this, Tribe is going to pop back up.
Or something kind of like Tribe.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Something kind of like Tribe.
You know, even though, if you guys were to drop another Tribe out there, it would sell over a million copies. Well over a million. So with the first Tribe.
I wish.
That sounds lovely, Andre. No,
trust me. The reason being is because Tribe was one of the hottest books back in the early 90s. People still know the name Todd Johnson, Larry Strowman. They still know those names. If they were to see that again, you can bet it would sell over what you sold previously.
Well, we're all for a challenge, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, Todd, I look forward to seeing you at Charivari this year. Of course, I'll be there probably that Saturday or Sunday.
Definitely. I'll put you on the swag list.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I might even be there.
Yeah, let's hope so. And maybe Todd has set up a spot where, you know, the comic artist can be there. You know what I mean?
That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea.
That'd be a real good idea.
We got to get that okayed by Tion, though. You know, he's in charge of all that type of stuff.
Oh, well, he down with it. I'm sure I can call Tion up tonight.
there you go.
But listen, I'm glad you guys was able to come on tonight. You know, we're over in about 3 minutes, and we're going to have to set up another interview because, you know, you guys have a lot to say. I obviously got a lot to say, and we have a lot of ground to cover, and you guys made a lot of points that made sense, and hopefully everyone that listened in tonight or those that are going to listen will take your words and utilize them to their benefit.
We appreciate the invitation.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Appreciate that. Until next time, thank you for joining the Chronicles of the Revolutionary Nerd.
Take care.
See you now.
Yep.